everyone. Welcome back to Justice for All. I'm so thankful that you found yourself here today. If you are familiar with Denver, then you know that there are a few different youth programs and nonprofits that serve kids who find themselves in different situations that they're needing some extra support. One of those organizations is Youth for Christ. They reach young people everywhere to raise up lifelong followers of Jesus. And more specifically, the Youth for Christ chapter in Denver has a juvenile justice program that I just absolutely love. The work they do is incredible. Did you know that on any given year in the U.S., there are over 740,000 teens referred to the juvenile justice system? I mean, that is just crazy to me. So the Juvenile Justice Ministry exists to create a faith-based care system and to come alongside of young people in what it means to journey with Jesus. So they are in 7 different centers in the Denver area alone. Today, I have Ian and Tim with me. Ian is the director of the Juvenile Justice Ministries at the Denver chapter. And Tim serves as the Juvenile Justice Ministry chaplain. These two are wildly gifted at what they do and how they love those that they serve. I can't begin to tell you how excited I am for you to dive into this episode. So, welcome to the show, Ian and Tim.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having us, Kenzie.
Absolutely. So, as always, before we get started, I want to ask you the question that I ask everyone that I have on here. When did you first know that you wanted to do what you do?
Wow. That's a great question. Great question. Sir Tim, I guess I'll go first on this one. Well, Kenzie, not to sound stereotypical to say this, but it's the truth. I did not choose youth work. Youth work really chose me, really did. You know, the earliest sign of this for me was back in 1998 or 99. I want to say it had to be 99 because it was close to my senior year of high school. Long story short, this was back home in Jamaica. I attended an all-technical high school, meaning that everyone in my high school had to learn a trade, pretty much. I was enrolled in their electronics program. So I had to work with little electronic devices and all that stuff. Long story short, I was in class one day, and one of my classmates, he just wasn't around for several weeks, if not several months. You know, he was just nowhere to be found. No one knew what happened to him. Again, this is back in the 1990s. You couldn't just shoot a text message off through my Apple phone. Apples weren't a thing. Well, they were a thing, but they were fruit back then, not a device. But he showed up for school after several months, and no one seemed to have cared that he wasn't there. No one seemed to have cared that he was missing. But I noticed. Went over to him, said, "Hey, I haven't seen you in a while. Everything going okay?" He just broke down and started to cry and shared with me that his mom migrated to England. He was living with his grandma, and she took care of him for several years, had no other family members. She passed away suddenly from a heart attack. He didn't know what to do, so he called the local church, called the pastor, and they helped with the burial and all that, you know, everything else that's involved, but he just never had any support. And I just felt the Lord really rested on my heart to talk with him some more and just to share with him some more and just to encourage him some more. Reminded him that this is not the end of things for him. Showed some condolences for his loss. But after talking all through physics class, I did nothing in physics class but talk to my buddy. His name is Witham. After speaking to Witham, he said to me, "Ian, what are you doing at this technical high school, dude? What are you doing learning how to wire stuff? What are you doing?" I'm like, "What do you mean what I'm doing? This is where I go to school." He's like, "You should become like a counselor, a youth counselor, something, because you really helped me just now." This was, as I mentioned, back in 98. I was about maybe 15, 16 years old at the time. And that was my very first time I've ever thought of or heard of me wanting to having to work with young people.
Yes. Tim?
I had the blessing of being raised in a Christian family in Dallas. And even in those early years, my parents modeled what it was like to be in mission work full-time. They were never in mission work, but they imparted that vision to my older brother and younger sister. So when I left Texas to come to Bible college here in Colorado, and this is many, many decades ago, there was a group of students at that college. It was called Western Bible Institute at that time, who on Monday nights would drive down to Denver and work as volunteers in a juvenile youth facility. Through that experience, and then a few years later on working with young people at a church in a Sunday school setting, it was more a matter of understanding the value of working with young people. I don't know that I actually felt a definite call from God. It was just responding to opportunities that God gave me through college. And then a couple of years after I finished college, when YFC here in Denver reached out to me and said, hey, come join our staff to work with young people in jail.
Wow, those stories are very impactful. Thank you for sharing. Okay, so tell us a bit about Youth for Christ, all of the programs that Youth for Christ provides, the communities that Youth for Christ is working in. Give us the whole spiel.
Well, if we gave you the whole spiel, we'd be here a long time. Suffice it to say that YFC is approaching our 80th birthday. It was founded back in 1944 after a group of servicemen came back from Europe and saw the lostness of young people here in the States. And they began YFC about that time. A lot of it was men and women who met for prayer, really asking God for wisdom in terms of how to start the ministry. Most people realize the name Billy Graham, but he was our first full-time staff member. He was never the president of YFC, but he was our first full-time staff member. Well, through the years, YFC became not just a national organization, but it became an international organization to the point that YFC internationally is in roughly 80 to 90 different countries around the world. Some of those countries, our missionaries don't go in as Youth for Christ, just because of the political climate in those countries where it's illegal to be a Christian. So they have to be very wise and discerning. How do they offer the ministry in a ways that keep them out of jail? So, but we do a lot of things YFC does around the world when it comes to a lot of social care, particularly in the poorer countries around the world. But again, there's a YFC International. Nationally, Youth for Christ, I'm going to guess, is somewhere in around 150 different communities around the nation, primarily just because YFC started in infancy towards the Midwest, up and down the East Coast. Most of our chapters are in that part of the country, but we have some in Texas, obviously Colorado, and up and down the Western Coast. But we're in roughly, I would say, 150 to maybe 200 different cities around the nation. So, and YFC really is all about how do we introduce young people to become lifelong followers of Jesus Christ. And in order to reach the every, in fact, part of our mission, part of our vision statement, is to give every young person the opportunity to make a decision to follow Christ. And so we do that by having a number of different strategies that reach young people primarily between the ages of 11 and 19 with the gospel. So we have ministries and programs that work with students on high school campuses, middle school campuses. We have programs around the nation that work with young people who are pregnant, working inner city. As you'll hear more in our time together, we have a pretty strong juvenile justice ministry here in Denver that works with young people who are incarcerated. So it really is, how do we develop ministries that reach young people where they're at? It, as creatively, as efficiently, but also understanding we are working with the church. We are not taking the place of the church. We are working with the church. So it's never an idea of young people come to YFC, they get all the spiritual growth they need. We really want young people to be followed up and to be planted in a local church.
Mm-hmm. Ian, can you explain more what the juvenile justice ministry is and what it does and how it functions?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Great question. Juvenile justice ministry is unlike any other ministry that you could ever imagine. And what I mean by that is simply this. We go into the facilities and we do ministry with the young people inside these facilities. Not everybody can do that. Not everyone has access to these facilities. In fact, I've met individuals before in recent times, actually, who said to me that, they felt led and called by the Lord to do, you know, ministry work with youth inside the facilities, show up to the facilities and say, hey, I'm Pastor so-and-so with all the credentials, And they were told, I'm sorry, you'll have to go through Denver Area Youth for Christ in order to gain access to work with these young people in the facilities. So our JJM program, as Sir Tim, I call him Sir, where I'm from, Sir is an endearing term for someone who you hold in high regard. And I tell him all the time, he's like a Jedi in ministry. So I hold him in extreme high regard. But we go into the facilities, Kenzie, and we were able to do one-on-one with our young people there. We're able to offer Sunday church services as well. We're able to offer small groups, Bible studies, etc. And the goal is to simply just make contact. Just to say, here we are. We are physically here. If you want to talk to us. And sometimes they don't necessarily want to engage in conversations, which we can understand. You know, we're not there to force or to coerce them into any or to engage with us on any level. We're just there to offer our presence there and be able to be a listening ear as well. So again, just to answer your question, we go inside the facilities. We have access to several facilities in and around the metro area, some on the outskirts of town as well. And once we're inside these facilities, our job is to make contact. Our job is to listen. Primarily, our job is to offer Bible study if anyone is interested in Bible study. On Sundays, we offer a church group as well, as I mentioned.
Yes. Can you explain the process a little more that you walk through with youth? Mm-hmm. So at what point do you show up in their story?
Good question. So there's one end on the inside the facilities that I just mentioned. I'm sure Tim can speak about that. Way better than I could. But before he does so, I'd like to mention on the community aspect of things, how we get involved in these young people's lives in the community is through what we call our mentoring program. Our mentoring program takes on two main facets to it, two main sides to it. We have the contracted mentoring services and we have the non-contracted mentoring services. So for example, this morning, True Story opened up my email. It's Monday morning. Right on top of my email was an email from someone who works currently right now with the judicial system, works, I want to say, out of 18th Judicial. So he's one of the staff members there. And he reached out to say he has a young man who is on his caseload who has been ordered by the court to have a mentor just for some emotional issues he's been going through lately. So he reached out to me to say, hey, do you have a mentor for us? Can you help us out? Can you hook him up with one of your mentors over at DAYFC? So that's on the contracting side of things. Non-contracts can simply be a matter of, for example, Kenzie, you may know of a young man or young woman within your community, within your church, who seems to is struggling a little bit more lately for whatever reason. And if you think, you know what, I think little Johnny could really, really benefit from having someone to walk alongside him in life and just to encourage him, be there for him, support him, you give us a call, shoot us an email, and we will say yes. So that's how we reach young people, how we get into their lives within the community. Inside the facilities, it's a little bit different, and sorry, Tim will speak to that.
Boy, I could talk a long time about that question. I have the blessing. I don't have to do gimmicks, and I'm not saying gimmicks are bad, but in my role as a chaplain, when I go into the two facilities that I'm responsible for here in Denver, I am the pastor. I'm introduced as a pastor. The staff know me as a pastor. When young people meet with me, they know I'm coming from a pastor role because that's who I am personally. That's who I am professionally. And so all of my years with YFC, I came on staff in 1978. When I go into facilities, I don't have to, I don't know how to put this right way. It's not a matter of me trying to build bridges with young people as much, but even that's part of who I am because I want to have relationships with young people. I want to have trusting conversations with them. But even as recently as yesterday morning when I went to one of the facilities, went on the girls' unit, none of the girls wanted to attend a Bible study that I offered, but one young lady wanted to meet with me one-on-one. Again, she had never met me before. I took her off the unit in a private area because the staff asked me to meet with her and said, she wants to meet with you. So we probably talked 20 minutes. And Kenzie, to have a 17-year-old girl who's never met me before and yet open her heart to me with conflict and struggles that she was having with her mom and knowing asking how can she repair that relationship, being able to step into her pain at that moment, even though we had just met 20 minutes before. I mean, those are precious opportunities that God gives us every day to meet with these young people. Again, as a chaplain, that's who I am. Do I play cards? You bet. Do I watch TV? You bet. Do I talk about sports? Yes. All those things, because that's where young people are. But they know I'm a pastor. And that's how they sometimes approach me. Can you pray with me? Can you do this, do that? It's just, for me, the way that God's wired me, that's how he's blessed me to operate in those facilities. The thing that's unique, too, about the two places I work, they are called detention centers, meaning that when a young person is young, meaning it could be anywhere up to age 10 to 17, when they're first arrested, they're brought to a detention center where they're detained until the court decides what to do with them. Over the years, particularly because of COVID, the numbers are down in terms of population in the jail. But I'm finding out that a lot of the young people I get to work with are there for a much longer period of time because of their charges that they're facing are sometimes pretty serious. Yesterday, in a different setting with a guy, I asked him, how can I pray for you? And he just said, pray for my court case. And I am bothered by the court system. It just takes too long for these young people to get processed. His next court date is not till January. He probably has another extension beyond that, even to March. And so here he is 6 months. He's already been in jail about four. So it's like, I don't know, the frustration I have many times, and I know this is not part of the answer, but it's just a matter of the chance that I have as a chaplain to walk beside him for months yet, and in some cases years with these young people.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, I know that the legal system, especially here in the United States, it's such a long process mm-hmm. for people to get through.
Right, right.
And I mean, even like, yes, adults, but it feels like youth and kids, sure. like that should be something that is so sped up.
Yes.
They shouldn't be spending a year in jail just waiting
right.
to go to court. Like that shouldn't happen. Like it should be a
right.
quicker process.
Right.
It feels that
right.
in and of itself is an injustice.
Sure.
On
sure.
top of everything else that they're experiencing.
Sure.
So
sure. Yeah. And the other side of it that I don't want to overlook either is the victims who mm-hmm. are part of the process, who wait for justice on their behalf, sometimes for 2 years. And I've seen that happen as well. So
yeah.
it's both sides of it. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole nother conversation.
Right, it is. Something that I've been thinking of. So as you're working in these communities, what changes are you seeing? What changes have you seen during your time in working for Youth for Christ?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I'll say from my experience of things, Kenzie, I see changes more so on the micro level of things. I, for example, currently right now, I mentor a young man through Youth for Christ, and his situation is a little bit different. It's a little bit specific. Can't say too much about it, but we have to, whoever is going to be his mentor, work with him in the professional capacity, would have to have a special training involved just to supervise him and keep him safe while you're in the community. Long story short, met with him last week for mentoring sessions, and when I got to his home, his grandparents were visiting from out of town, all the way from Tennessee, and I said hello to them, greeted them. You know, the young man and myself went about our business, a couple of hours in the community, did some mentoring. On the way back, a second set of grandparents were at his house again for dinner. His bio parents were out of town, so both grandparents came in. And when I say changes on the micro level, this is what I mean. The grandmom who I met, the first grandma, on my second encounter with her for the evening, when I'm dropping him off, kid you not, Kenzie, she had the biggest grin on her face when she saw me again. She's like, never got to tell you this in the beginning because I knew you were rushing out, but thank you so much for the work that you do with him. He talks about how much he's improved with his coping skills because, you know, our mentoring, it's basic, it's simple, it's what's needed. We have a therapeutic services team that does therapy work, but our mentorship program, Kenzie, really it's just to formulate relationships. And as Sir Tim said earlier, we want to point these young people in the direction of Christ and get them, you know, hooked up with a local church in their community. It was just a pleasure for me to hear from this young man's grandparents. They invited me in for dinner. Couldn't stay for dinner. I had to go on with my afternoon. But just to hear the gratitude from the grandparents and the changes that they have seen, primarily so in his responsiveness to the situation that's going on. For me, I give God all the glory because I'm thinking, okay, I'm meeting with this young man and I'm doing my thing. You know, I love young people. I've always worked with young people. But the impact that I heard from his grandma, I was not expecting to hear. So that's one of the small changes. So if my case is one case, multiply that by another 5, another 10, another 15, another 20. That's the bigger impact on the community level. But it first begins with individualized relationship on the individual or micro level.
To add to that, as I look and I think back over the years I've been able to do this ministry, one of the things that continually scares me as a citizen is how frequently when I talk with young people, they talk how easy it is to get a gun these days. And they have this mindset of, I'm going to die tomorrow, and what difference does it make how I live today? So there's certainly over the years I've seen a devaluing of life, including their life as a teenager, devaluing of life as of another peer that they have no respect or concern for. Certainly our young people today that I'm seeing and working with, drugs is a big issue, and I'm not talking about just marijuana. I'm talking about the heavy drugs. Methamphetamines, fentanyl is a big one that our young people are struggling with. And again, it's so available in our communities that they're just, you know, it's uncommon to hear young people not doing drugs. Let me put it that way. Mental health is a big, big challenge as well in our facilities, where I'm going to say probably 80%, if not more, of the young people who are incarcerated are on some kind of medication, prescribed medication, for mental health or ADHD or schizophrenia, you know, something like that, where in order to manage their life, they're on some kind of therapeutic drugs, not to mention what they can get on the street. So education is another big challenge for our young people. And this comes up all the time when I ask young people to volunteer if they want to read at a Bible study or church service. Some are ready to read, some can't read. I remember being with a young man who is from a country in South Africa. Myself and an urban pastor that comes in with me to one of the jails, this young guy, he's 15, but he confessed to us he doesn't know how to read. It's some of these issues that we're facing with our young people who are incarcerated. Teen pregnancy, big issue with our young people. Family breakup, more and more of the young people I work with have parents that are either not present because they're sometimes dead, sometimes in a different foreign country, sometimes they're in prison themselves. So it's the family structure itself is pretty fractured, more so than even 10 years ago, I would answer. So. Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to take a step back and revisit this whole concept of different types of injustice that are around incarceration. And one of those is this concept of the school to prison pipeline. I would love to have one of you explain kind of what that is at first, so we can kind of get some common ground there. And then talk about what that looks like in our communities and what you've been seeing and maybe that pattern showing up in the youth that you work with.
Great question. That question has been around for a very long time. And I don't know if anyone has the answer that would accurately capture or depict exactly what's going on. But what we do have is real life examples and how those examples feed into the system as to what's going on systemically. I'll have to say it this way, Kenzie. You know, when you think about schools and you think about prisons, they're obviously both institutions. when you think about schools again and how the cafeteria is set up, where kiddos have to go with their trays and pass through the line and pick up their meal and have a seat in an assigned area, I see that in the schools, and I have worked in these facilities. In fact, I've worked in two particular facilities here in Colorado. One of them we're currently still providing ministry services in as well. And I observe that as well. It's the same physical motion through the cafeteria, same as you'd see in a public school setting. But when it comes down to the criminology part of things or the crimes being committed, as Sertim put it earlier, in our experience, we've seen where a breakdown in the family dynamic, where a breakdown in the community, where there's, as Tim mentioned just now, the availability of certain drugs. Back in the day, you know, a 14, 15-year-old kid would only be experimenting with perhaps marijuana and alcohol, not to minimize marijuana and alcohol, but now we're seeing stuff as deadly as fentanyl. First responders are overdosing from intervening in an overdose with fentanyl, and they themselves are falling over from, you know, these are real things that are happening in the community. So as a result of the breakdown in the family, breakdown in the community, we're seeing where, you know, delinquent behaviors then will be on the rise. And, you know, it's very seldom you find a young person who is doing okay in school, who has a decent family background, family systems are involved, and suddenly tomorrow morning they got up and took a gun and go rob a 7-Eleven store and shot someone in the process. It's very seldom you see it that way. What you'll tend to see is a build up to that level of crime. So when you talk about the school to prison pipeline, there are several things happening there. And the main thing that I can point out is what's happening, as Tim mentioned, in the community, in the family, the breakdown of that support system. When a young man is thinking, hey, I'm now part of a gang because I find my protection in the gang. Gang is more of a community for me. And my gang leader says that if I want to prove myself, I better go rob the 7-Eleven down the street, and I got to do it by this day and this time. They're going to go ahead and they're going to try to make an impression on whoever that gang leader is or whoever is in command to that person. So therefore, you see now suddenly little Johnny has moved from being unsupervised in the community, not having the parental support in the home, to suddenly being involved in gangs, to suddenly had to prove himself that he's tough enough to be in a gang. All of a sudden, Johnny went to go rob a 7-Eleven store, got nervous, squeezed the trigger, didn't mean to hurt anyone, the clerk got shot. Now he's looking at several years behind bars. It happens that easily sometimes, Kenzie. And that's kind of experientially what the school to prison pipeline would look like from that end of things. Now, politically, are there things happening in the community that could make a difference and help to, help to alleviate some of these community-based level troubles we're having? Yes, there are things that can be done from a governmental level. But I'm pretty sure that's a different question, perhaps for a different podcast. Hope I answered your question.
Yeah, that was great.
I would add just two brief things, Kenzie. One, there are many pipelines. School is only one of them. The other thing I would add, too, is that's why in YFC, you talk about what Ian just said about schools and stuff. We want to work aggressively to provide options for young people. And that's why we have what we call here in Denver a City Life program that's very much in its infancy, so that young people have options they can attend to. The thing that I still want to hang on to is it's all about moral choices that our young people have to make. And what opportunities, what options can we give them as Christian adults to step into their life, to show them and demonstrate to them that there are options and to be a support to them. They don't have to go the gang route. But even as I say that, Kenzie, what Ian just said, I mean, the neighborhoods where these young people grow up in, it's how do you get away from a gang? It's around you. And so how can we as ministers and missionaries, and this goes for any nonprofit agency out there in the community, Christian or not, how do we provide young people with the refusal skills so they don't have to get sucked into a gang? Again, the challenge, it's generational many, many times. And so how do we support a young person who wants to stand and break the chain of being involved in a gang when that's all he's ever seen? And there's no question it's a hard challenge today, but it's still a matter of, there are young people who grew up in those situations who turn out okay. Not every young person who grows up in the poverty, school, what have you, not every young person gets in trouble. So it's just about how do we find those young people and help them be a support to the other young people, to their peer group. So,
yeah, you mentioned that the school to prison pipeline, that's not the only pipeline.
Right.
What are some other ones?
Well, family's a pipeline. As I said, poverty's a pipeline. Lack of jobs is a pipeline. Lack of really strong male role models for a lot of our gang members. What does it be a man to take responsibility? Teen pregnancy and teen activity, sexual activity is another pipeline that creates young people to make poor decisions that affect not just their life, but the life of another baby who's going to grow up in this kind of a system. So there's certainly social media is a huge pipeline for young people today with that way that they can communicate through Facebook or texting, Snapchat, what have you, where gangs are no longer just confined to a neighborhood of two or three blocks. You know, you can have guys and gals from different parts of the city who meet up and they communicate through social media. So, I mean, it's a much more complex, challenging world than it used to be, for sure. So that in itself would be another pipeline that helps kids get sucked into a destructive lifestyle.
How can people who are listening to this podcast or who will be engaging in this podcast when they hear this, how can they get involved? What can they do? You know, people who aren't boots on the ground, justice practitioners, people who are just engaging in this podcast, how can they get involved?
Well, that's a great question again, Kenzie. And again, thank you for providing such a platform to have these conversations, because the first step to get involved, I would say, is to be informed. So what you're doing right here is what the community needs, an outlet, a way for us to get this word out there, to talk about it. You know, it can be a skittish topic. I understand that. But at the same time, it's a very necessary topic, especially as believers. We're called to do this kind of work. So I'd say being aware, you know, being informed, being educated about what's happening in and around your community is step number one. And I'd say another powerful step is a step of prayer. We ask for your prayers, we ask for your support, and we ask for prayer for everything, in particular and primarily prayer for the young people that we work with. Kenzie, I kid you not, sometimes you can meet a young person, you just begin to hear their stories, and immediately, while you're listening to their stories, the only thought you're fighting in your head is, what do I say? How do I even comfort this person? What do I possibly say to convey to this young person that I'm hearing you, I care about you, and I feel sad for what you have experienced, you know? Sometimes words are just not there. So we ask for prayer for the young people and the stuff that they have to endure. We ask for prayer. We ask for, naturally, support in terms of volunteer human resources. If, you know, if someone who has any extra time on their hands and would like to become involved in the life of a young person, to walk alongside them, to be either a mentor for them, just to be someone who shows that they're a caring, trusting adult in their lives, we can always, always use a few good men and women to step up alongside these young people and become mentors in their lives as well. And last but not least, I'll have to say financial resources go very far away with the work that we do. We oftentimes have to purchase various literature, Bibles in particular, we have to purchase to hand to these young people inside these facilities. It's not uncommon for a young person to be discharged from a facility with nowhere to go. In fact, we had a case recently with one of our chaplains, James. He has a young man who is working with who called him to say, hey, you know, they released me today. I got released from Lookout Mountain and there's no place for him to go. No support for him whatsoever. So sometimes those financial resources are able to step into that gap to help us to provide, even if it's a few change of clothes, you know, a few pair of shoes or whatever they may need immediately, you know, to get back on their feet. We're there for them as well.
I would add to that, and certainly to agree with what Ian said, prayer has to be the first step. in terms of where is God training, softening your heart to young people who are lost. That doesn't have to mean just young people who are in jail. Okay. The second thing, though, I would say is for that adult to take a hard look at what I would call their circle of influence, meaning who is already part of their life that they can affect in a positive way towards becoming a follower of Christ. There are young people in every school. There are young people in every neighborhood. So it really comes down to if you're a parent or a grandparent, you know, what are you doing right now to raise your kids, your young people, in a manner that pleases God? So that's what I'm saying, circle of influence. You know, start where God is already using you to impact the lives of young people. When you want to take it further, certainly looking at juvenile justice could be an option. But as I said earlier, there's a lot more that people do in YFC than just work with young people in jail. So it really comes down to get informed, you know, stay connected, reach out to people that are doing this kind of ministry. One of the challenges that I would put before your audience in this, you know, here in Denver, I mean, when you hear a story on the news or read something on the internet, paper, whatever, about a juvenile being arrested, 9 times out of 10, one of our staff or ministry leaders, a volunteer, is going to have contact with that young man or woman while they're in jail. And so part of what I would have them do, if they're interested, start by praying that they would have a burden. In fact, I saw a great quote last week that Spurgeon said, before you become a winner of souls, you must first be a weeper for souls. Mm. And so it really comes down to, where is God moving my heart to reach out to the lost? And that could be someone in your family. It could be someone in your neighborhood. It could be a peer of one of your kids. But certainly, we're always looking for the right people that want to invest their life and take a risk to love young people who are very much banished from society. In fact, and I'll just throw this in real quick, one of my favorite verses in the Bible is out of 2 Samuel 14. It's a whole story of where Absalom and David are having a conflict, and this lady kind of puts David in the spot where he realizes he's wrong. But she makes a statement to David about, you know, God devises means so that those who are banished don't stay that way forever. And so my response to that is, God has put YFC in a place where young people are banished from society. And I'm not being harsh when I say this, Kinsey, but there are some who need to be banished from society. I know of young men that I work with who have taken the lives of others. And that's unfortunate. And they're going to be in prison a long time. So in one sense of the word, they're banished from society. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they're not banished from God's presence. Amen. And that's where we as missionaries Amen. Get to step in. And we can't change their destiny when it comes to the court system, but we can certainly change their eternal destiny when it comes to where God wants them and a relationship with them.
Mm. I love the piece of starting with awareness and starting with people being educated. Mm-hmm. I think that's where I start when I'm talking about justice and when I'm engaging with people and having a conversation around justice. It's this, just an awareness will take you far. And what's going to even take you farther is being in relationship with people. Yes. That is just the bare minimum. Sure. Because once you engage in a relationship with someone and become more aware, you can't not engage. You right. can't right. not well, care well and pursue that.
Well sure. said. Well sure. said, Kenzie. Mm-hmm. Well said. I mean, I couldn't imagine it being said any better, because you're correct. You know, I can't tell you how many individuals we've worked with, you know, in our ministry who, when they're just coming on board, you know, they oftentimes say, wow, I just didn't know. I just didn't know that Youth for Christ was doing this. I didn't know that you guys were in the... I didn't know. So much lack of knowledge around the work that we do. So you're correct. That exposure, that education. I remember a quote from way back in the day, I think in grade school perhaps, that says, you know, education brings about change. If you want to see change, then let's get informed. Let's get educated. And then, as you correctly put it, you know, it's almost impossible not to see change after you're informed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. All right. We are going to end our time. But before we do, I would love to hear, what is one thing that you want those listening to know?
that you are a part of the solution. As I mentioned, through prayer, which is the most effective way to affect anything. That's the Bible's opinion, not just mine. Prayer, for sure. But I'd like listeners to know that you can get involved, again, through prayer, through volunteering your time, through donating resources, whatever it may be, whatever the Lord placed on your heart, you are a part of the solution as well.
I heard the saying years ago, so it's not mine, but I'll say it. Young people are not the enemy. They are victims of the enemy, would be the one thing I would want people to know. And then, two, we have websites that I would direct people to if they want to know more about YFC.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Honestly, I'm so genuinely saying this from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for spending your time and sharing your knowledge and your experiences with us.
Kenzie, thank you so much for your time, and thanks for the opportunity.
Sure, for sure.
We're happy to be here, and we're always willing to come back whenever you want us to come back and talk with you some more.
Oh, you know you'll be back here soon.
Okay. Look forward to it.
If this conversation was enlightening to you and you want to learn more about how to get involved or the work that Youth for Christ does, you can go to yfc.net. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at SoutheastCC. Justice for All is a Southeast podcast.